to Women Worth Knowing, the radio program and podcast hosted by Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn.
We know there are so many incredible stories, and we want to thank all of you that have written in to tell us your stories or the stories of someone you know that has been very influential in your lives. And some of you have even suggested women that we have yet to do. I want you to know we have compiled a list, and we also plan in the future of having a day where the podcast is where we read some of your letters and we talk about how inspirational some of these your story and some of the stories you've sent in to us have inspired us. And they do. There is just something so inspirational about finding the story or hearing the story of a woman who walked with God and became more than she ever could without God. And I think we've all had that experience. Don't you think, Robin?
Absolutely. And that's a great introduction for our guest speaker today,
who
is Melanie Dobson, a woman who walks with God. And she and I met because we're both writers. I don't know, Melanie, it's been quite a few years ago that we met, but then we've just kind of been in those same writing circles. And I reached out and asked her to be on the podcast because she, as a novelist, is incorporating into her newest novel a woman that Cheryl and I have wanted to talk about for a long time, Grace Livingston Hill. So, Melanie, welcome. We're glad you're here.
Oh, thank you so much. It's just such a joy to be here with you. I really appreciate you having me.
Okay, Melanie, we'll get into a little bit of your story a little bit later, but I want to know because I started reading Grace Livingston Hill as a young mom because I needed something that wasn't too heavy, that was kind of light, that was had happy endings. And every book has a happy ending with Grace Livingston Hill, which
yes.
I love. So for those who don't know, Grace Livingston Hill was an author. And we're going to talk about her story today. Melanie Dobson is going to tell us her story. But I want to know, what, you know, how were you introduced to Grace Livingston Hill, and what made you decide to put her in your novel?
Oh, yeah. So I have loved reading Grace Livingston Hill since probably junior high school.
Oh, my goodness.
Say.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's been a few years. I always loved to write. Like, that was my passion ever since I was little. Like, 7 years old, I started writing. So that has been just like this God-given passion that he gave me. But I also love to read. And because I lived out like in the middle of nowhere, I grew up in Ohio, and we lived out in kind of what is known as Amish country now.
Right.
And so we didn't have a lot of opportunities to go to the bookstore or the library, but we had a bookmobile that would come about a mile from our house.
I remember bookmobiles.
Do you remember a bookmobile?
Yes.
Such a happy place for me. I take my little huffy bike out and, you know, pedal the mile and fill my basket up with books. But my mom, rightly so, is very cautious about what I was allowed to read. But they always had the Grace Livingston Hill books, and I was allowed to read Grace Livingston Hill. And so I would pile all my books into my basket and come back. And I just fell in love with her stories. I love the description. I love the suspense. I love the happy endings that you mentioned, Cheryl. And I love how, like, looking back now, I love how she was able to put really complex theology through dialogue into her stories. And so I learned so much. And it was kind of, it's like your Christy Miller series, Robin, where the characters were wrestling, but there was always a hero, a heroine that were trying to make really good choices to have pure relationships. And they were these beautiful romances. And so I just aspired to not only be the characters, you know, some of the characters in Grace's books, but I also wanted to write like her. And so that became just a goal. She was kind of my mentor personally, but also professionally through those years.
What we love about books like that is the evergreenness. I mean, here's the thing. Grace was born 1865. Her mm-hmm. books are still in print. And mm-hmm. she was actually born on Easter Sunday, the day after Abraham Lincoln's death.
Wow.
Isn't that interesting?
Mm-hmm.
And so just her journey to become a writer, we want to hear a little bit more about that and how then, I mean, you and I, Melanie, and Cheryl as well, we're all three writers, but as novelists, there's just that sense of being, as you said, mentored by her, of how she was able to tell the story and honor God so mm-hmm. profoundly.
Yeah, and she wrote more than 100 books. I'm still in awe of that. When she died, I believe she was 80 when she died, and she was halfway through a novel. And her daughter then came in and finished the book. But that was just her calling. She worked in missions. She taught Sunday school. She spoke often. So she was a very busy lady doing all sorts of things. But I think these stories were just her heart. She wanted to tell these stories. And then at a practical level, she was a single mom for a while. And so practically, she was trying to provide for her family and for her mom. Her own mother lived with her and her two daughters. And so God used that really difficult situation to kind of push and inspire her to keep writing. And she did. To the day she died, she was continuing to work on her books.
And that influence for her, because her father was a writer, her mother was a writer, her aunt was a prolific writer. And so then Grace just grew up with all that encouragement. And then when here came this marriage. How long was she married? Do you know? Maybe.
So for her first husband, I believe it was about 7 years.
7 years, and he passed away.
He was a pastor, right? Was it?
Yes.
He was a pastor. I mean, you consider. I think sometimes that we don't realize that stories are often born of tumultuous or hard situations.
Amen, sister.
And that is really true when it comes to Grace Livingston Hill, because I remember, you know, I had read so many of her books, whatever was available, you know, I picked up, and we had, I was in a church in Vista, and because they knew I loved Grace Livingston Hill, they started reading Grace Livingston Hill. So we began to trade these books back and forth. So they were making the rounds. And somebody suggested I read the biography of Grace Livingston Hill, which I did. And when I found out that her husband, who was a pastor, and it was such a wonderful courtship, and it seemed like this was the dream relationship, and then to find out that he was a morphine addict, that was because of pain, was it not?
It was, yep. He became addicted to morphine because of pain.
Mm-hmm.
And she loved him. I mean, I think
yes, she
had
did.
A really sweet relationship, and perhaps all of her novels after that maybe were inspired by him for her hero. But yeah, it was a beautiful relationship, and obviously difficult with his addiction there and then with his death. And she just I'm just in awe, honestly, of her ability to be able to write through some of these really hard situations. And you ask Robin about the inspiration, like why I'm wanting to write a novel inspired in part by her life. And it was because she was able to take this really hard situation and continue to use her gifts to be faithful to her gift of writing, to be faithful to what God had called her to do, and continue her work, even as she grieved. I mean, I know she stopped and grieved, had a really good first marriage, and then I know you'll talk about this, but a really difficult second marriage. And she continued to write and be faithful unto her covenant to her second husband in spite of the difficulties. But God had called her, put a clear call in her life, and she continued to follow that call to encourage others, to be able to discuss how God redeems really difficult situations. And it wasn't just something that she read about. It was something that she knew through her own personal experience, how God redeemed her own life.
Okay, and let's talk for a second, because I remember reading that the first publisher was like, this will never sell because of all the virtue in it.
Yes.
And they did not want to publish it. And I don't know which publisher it was exactly, because, you know, who, because.
It was Lippincott.
Lippincott. Well, yeah. You know, the famous publisher Lippincott. But they, but I remember they were shocked by the success.
Yes.
Exactly.
It became a shock. And, you know, because, you know, she was writing in a time when women, okay, first of all, you know, movies were coming out, and women were being encouraged even then to get out of the home, to, you know, be more sophisticated. And of course, that meant cigarettes, and that meant, according to Grace Livingston Hill, it also meant red lipstick.
No.
Yes. That was one of my favorite parts, you know.
Shocking, right?
Right.
It was like that red lipstick and that she could, or, and sometimes gum, chewing gum.
And rouge.
And rouge. And yes, they would rouge their cheeks. And the other thing was that I still remember this, that women a virtuous woman. You could tell a godly woman who was over 40 because she always wore gray. So,
really?
Yes. Yeah, so when you read Grace Livingston Hill books, one of the fun things is you're really getting insight into culture and you're getting insight into virtuous culture of that time. Yes. And her characters are always a standout from other characters because of their virtue. And again, you know, there was one book and the woman was over 40 and she always wore gray, you know, which was very, you know, in keeping with, you know, the time and, you know, virtue and, you know, women of the Bible and, oh, and wearing their hair up.
Oh, yes. Very important.
Yes.
You know, I was thinking, Melanie, how similar you with your love for reading and writing at such a young age that Grace's first book was published when she was only 12.
Incredible.
And she had that really early on interest in writing and developing that gift. But I read somewhere that she really saw that as a gift from God and that she was being mm-hmm. a good steward of doing what God created her to do. And I love that for yeah. any woman to recognize what she is good at doing and then just developing that gift and giving it back to the Lord over and over in ways that he can use. Clearly, she
Absolutely.
Did that in spite of all the other challenges she had in her life. Because with her two children, and then didn't she have to help support her mother?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, her mom lived with her. So she was supporting her mother and her two girls during the early 1900s. She was a single mother. And yeah, just I think that Grace, she just paved this path for so many of us as godly women, but those of us who write fiction, she went ahead and she paved this path for us with this new genre that I think, like you said, Cheryl, that the publishers said that they would not, nobody would read these books, these virtuous books that you're talking about. Nobody would read them, and they did. They started reading them, and then millions. I mean, I think she ended up selling, I mean, some numbers say close to 100 million. Now that the copyrights are expired, we'll never know how many people are continuing to read her books. But so many people wanted this redemptive message back then and still today through those of us who write fiction, but through her books. They're still seeking out these stories and the gift that she's given us and being able to communicate so clearly God's redemption. I keep saying that word, but that's what her books were truly, these redemptive stories. Can I read you? I found this quote that she said at the end of her life. Do you mind if I read
it? Oh,
I
love it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think this just sort of summarizes exactly just her heart and her intention behind these stories. And now I say that, and now I need to find out where I put this.
Okay, while you do that, I want to bring up a point, too.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. But, you know, she asks some contemporaries, women in her time. One would be Josephine Butler in England, and another would be Catherine Bushnell. They were both Catherine Bushnell was a doctor. But there were not many opportunities for women to make money, let alone support their mother and her children. Women just could not make enough money to
right.
do and something she, like that, unless they were doctors.
Right. And she,
yeah.
Grace committed to doing 3 books a year in order for there to be enough to just, you know.
Does that inspire you?
To
Robin.
Well, I do. Typically, I write 2 and sometimes 3 books a year, but it's that commitment that is blended with this is the call that God's put on my life. So then you can't not do it.
Yeah.
And I really saw that
right.
in things that we researched about her, that it was the sweetness of the calling. And for listeners, I want them to just take that to heart, to say, what is it the Lord has gifted you and called you to do? And Galatians in chapter 5, I think, in the Message, you know, make a careful exploration of who you are and the gifts you were given, and then sink yourself into that. And that concept, I put it that very poorly, but the concept is that
we have
that responsibility to figure out what it is that we are uniquely gifted and called to do, and then to do
Walk
it with
it.
Our whole heart. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, we're ready for that quote too, Melanie.
Okay, the quote that she said, this was near the end of her life, and she said, "I feel that there is enough sadness and sorrow in the world, so I try to end all of my books as beautifully as possible, since that is God's way and the best way," is what she said, because she got a lot of criticism for writing happy endings. All of
her
books ended with some sort of, the critics didn't like her. You know, she got a lot of flack for that, but she felt that that was her call, like you're talking about, Robin, like this is her call, be able to show how God could work things together for good. And I think as a child, well, as a junior higher, reading these stories, her stories, and things were hard in my own family and my own life, and being able to see, okay, God can work this together for good, like he did in Grace's stories and in Grace's life. And I was just so inspired and continue to be inspired, but so inspired by that. But that was very intentional on her part. She could have written a lot of other endings, type of endings, especially, you know, during the roaring 20s and the 30s when she was writing these books. But she wanted to offer people a better way than what the world was offering at that point.
And the criticism, I mean, we're lightly going over that, but I remember the intensity that was written in her biography about how strong the criticism was. I mean, they called it junk fiction. I mean, the things that they said about her. But again, remember, you're not dealing with so much the Christian community. You're dealing with the top publishing agencies and their critics. And it was, you know, mean. But you think she's writing at the same time as like someone like Mark Twain. As you know, as you start thinking about those that, you know, they're
Great
comparing
Gatsby.
Her, right, the Fitzgeralds, F. Scott Fitzgerald, the type of things. And, oh, talk about depressing stories. I mean, F. Scott Fitzgerald, he's a great writer, but, oh, my goodness. Or William Faulkner and, you know, his writing. So you're dealing with people that begin to really do the dark side of life. Herman Melville. Moby Dick.
Right.
And so those are considered, these are the great works. And then you've got next to this, Grace Livingston Hills, which all have happy endings, which was really what she was criticized.
Right, because they offer hope.
Mm-hmm.
And that never goes out of style. That's why her books are still selling.
But she had great character development.
Yeah.
I have to say this. But I want to talk for a second about what I remember she said her process of writing was. Because I find this... for somebody like me who wants to look over my GPS and know exactly what route it is giving me before I get in the car. So her process would, she would start writing and never quite knew where a book was going to end. Mm-hmm. So there was not an outline.
Is that how it is for you, Melanie?
It is how it is.
It's how it is for me too.
I'm groaning right now.
I know. No.
I've got to give up my control.
They call us pantsers, meaning we just write by the seat of our pants.
There's except I don't think that's it. I think it's by inspiration of the Spirit.
I do too.
That the Spirit is like, and that's what she felt, that she wrote under the inspiration of the Spirit. So she never knew exactly the direction a book would take. And she would just kind of listen and she'd be inspired and she'd sit down at the typewriter, right? She used a typewriter, didn't she?
Yeah. She wasn't able to cut and paste like we are today, you know, move things around on the typewriter, on the computer like we do. Yeah, she was, I call it a discovery writer. I kind of sit down.
I like that.
I just discover what God, you know, what these words are going to be as the story progresses. I think it was Stephen King that said, put interesting characters in a really bad place and let them see, and, you know, write to see what happens. And so that's kind of how I do it. I have my characters. I'm curious to know your process, Robin, but I have my characters ready to go.
She does
sort of
too.
The idea of the journey. Yep. And
she told me.
Cheryl knows. No, I develop those characters. Same thing. I develop the characters so I feel like I know them. I introduce myself to them before I start writing about them and they start telling me their lives, and I can visualize them and I can compare them to real people I know. And so it just follows that progression of if this person with this personality and these life issues, what is the outcome going to be with Jesus, with hope?
Mm-hmm.
And I see that in all of Grace's books of saying so that those women during that time, I mean, think about it. Here's women during Depression, during World War
One
and two.
Just barely two.
And
yeah.
But here they are with the world's crashing in, and they
have
a novel that lifts their spirits and their hopes to a place that God really is in control. What a gift.
Mm-hmm.
What a gift.
It is a gift.
So she, I'm so struck with the fact that she would sit down and let, she felt like the story was pouring through her and, mm-hmm. you know, her inspired.
Mm-hmm.
And just, and she didn't have that many edits.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah, no, she was like, it was like a one draft. I mean, it was, I mean, it really was just divine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, that can be for people who do write and who haven't ever experimented with fiction, but play with it every once in a while. That can be very daunting. You know, that person is in this studio or anything, but, you know, that thought.
Looking at you, Cheryl.
Yeah, I know, and I'm feeling it. I'm feeling it. So I have to ask you this, Melanie. Mm-hmm. So you said you started reading her when you were still, you said before junior high?
It was junior high. It was
junior high.
Grade. It was sixth grade, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Reading the books. And now, you know, you're older and you write. How many books have you written? I need to know this.
Yeah, so I have published. I've written more than I've published, but I have published about 30 books now, novels, a couple of nonfiction sprinkled in there. And then I have, you know, a couple collecting dust from those early years when I was still figuring out how to write. But yeah, it's.
And her books are really good. Everyone listening, Melanie Dobson, D-O-B-S-O-N. Go get a Melanie Dobson book. You won't
Thank
regret
you.
It. They're so good.
Thank you.
Well, I have a few more questions. I don't know how many of the answers we'll be able to get to on this program. But I really want to talk about, like, I want to ask you, and maybe I should save this for part two, but my question is, like, what inspired you to put Grace Livingston Hill in as a character in one of your books? I mean, have you done this before where you put real life characters in your books?
I have done this before. I wrote a book, it's called Memories of Glass.
I love the title.
It's a book, thank you so much. It's a book set in Holland during World War II era. And I have a character there named Johan von Holst, and he was a real gentleman. He was actually still alive when I was writing the book. He was 107 years old.
Oh my goodness.
But just, isn't that amazing?
Mm-hmm.
But he had rescued 600 Jewish children who were at the time in a theater. They were all collected there in Amsterdam, and they were in this theater. And he was able to work with a Jewish man and a Jewish woman across the street who worked at a nursery. And they were able to rescue these 600 children together, the three of them. Mm. Incredible story. But he never told his story until the very end of his life. And so I was able to capture that. So I used him as a, you know, he was a real person, able to use him in my novel, but I do that so rarely. And in this story, the Moonflower Lake story that I'm getting ready to publish next year, Grace won't actually be in the story. It's very much inspired by her life.
Mm.
And so I'm taking a lot of her stories, and I'm capturing some of her characters and some of the things that she did in her books, as well as just taking a bit of her personal life and creating a story out of that. And so this will be completely fictionalized, just inspired by her books and her personal story.
Oh, I love that. Okay, now I've got to ask you, is some of your books, are they historical fiction or are they just these characters coming in?
Most of my books are historical fiction.
Oh, I love historical
fiction. And she's very good at time slip.
Mm-hmm.
So you get both. How would you describe time slip writing?
Yeah, so time slip, those have been my most recent novels that I've done. I have two separate plot lines. I have one more contemporary and then one historical, which will be the case for this novel, where I have a plot line from the 1930s, 1940s, and then one about 2006. And so I have it, they're usually some sort of mystery, and so I have a mystery thread, something that happened back in history that the contemporary character is trying to resolve, which will be the case in this story.
Oh man, you are speaking my language right now. I'm like, I've got to get these books. But you know, yeah, Robin's got me moving in so many different directions right now.
Right, Cheryl, right.
But yeah, right now we're collaborating on a project that's nonfiction. So as soon as that's finished. Okay, I want to come back with Melanie because I have got so many more questions for her, believe it or not. And Grace Livingston Hill is one of my favorite people. So please join us for part two next week. You don't want to miss it because my questions are really good.
Thank you for listening to Women Worth Knowing with Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn. For more information on Cheryl, visit CherylBroderson.com or follow her on Instagram or Facebook. For more information on Robin, visit RobinGunn.com or follow her on Instagram or Facebook. Join us each week for a lively conversation as we explore the lives of well-known and not-so-well-known historical and contemporary Christian women. If you think there is a woman worth knowing, we'd love to hear from you. Email us at WWK@cccm.com. We hope you've enjoyed today's episode. Make sure you rate us on your podcast app, subscribe, and share it with a friend. Thank you again for listening to Women Worth Knowing with Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn. Women Worth Knowing is a production of Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa.